from Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two guys fumbling their way through the music business so you don't have to. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino and the Music Row Show.
Get this mic fixed.
Yeah, because it's pointed at your mouth.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. Hello, friends. Welcome to the Music Row Show. My name is Scott.
And my name is Hino. Hey, thanks for tuning in tonight. We're glad that you're with us. This show, as you know by now, is for all you songwriters and musicians and performers out there who are just trying to figure stuff out here in Music City.
That's right. Now, remember, we don't know anything 10 years into this, and we're still out there slinging songs during the day just like y'all are. But we are able to bring brilliant, talented people into the studio and visit with them and give you the opportunity to pick their brain as well.
Yeah, you can do that by going to Facebook. We're on there at facebook.com/TheMusicRowShow. Like us, chime in with your questions and comments right there, and conversation's starting right now. Now, I'm excited about tonight. We've got a big show tonight.
We do indeed.
We're all over the musical spectrum tonight. First, with rocker-turned-classical composer Kip Winger here in the first hour.
Yep. Then we're going to be talking to, some real musical giants. Also, guitar great John Jorgensen, drummer, hit songwriter Harry Stinson, and singer extraordinaire Beth Hooker are going to be along with us in hour two to talk about their upcoming tribute to John D. Loudermilk, which is airing on PBS this week, I believe.
This coming week, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Scott, let's not delay this any longer. Let's introduce our guest here.
Okay, I've never in 10 years started out an intro like this. Vaslav Nijinsky was one of the greatest dancers of the earliest 20th century. His choreographed pieces were so progressive. I don't know if you caught this, I know. They were so shocking that fights would break out in the audience.
I heard that.
That's crazy. During his performances. And then several decades after Vaslav's death, our guest, you're going to wonder where I'm going with all this, left his gig playing bass with Alice Cooper, formed his own rock band, became a huge star, taking the hairband rock formula and throwing in some great progressive musical turns. His first two albums sold millions before the Seattle movement kind of pulled the rug away from that entire genre. But Kip never stopped making music, creating music, performing all over the world. His musical journey has led him to compose several movements for the San Francisco Ballet. And last year, a CD of his compositions was released and topped the Billboard Traditional Classic charts. The Grammy-nominated CD titled Conversation with Nijinsky is available now, will be available and performed this week with the Nashville Symphony on September 14th, 15th, and 16th. This is just a great story, and it's such a pleasure to say, Kip Winger, gosh knows we've been trying to make this happen for years. I'm glad you're here. Welcome to the Music Row Show.
Yeah. Oh, thank you very much. That was a hell of an intro there.
Thank you. We're out of time now. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Thank you and good night. All right.
Does that a lot. We always run out of time. So your musical journey is a pretty fascinating one. It's varied. It involved a lot more than rock. How did music start out for you as a kid? What was all involved there?
We have 1 hour, right?
1 hour. Yeah. Yeah. Plenty of time.
You know, I keep trying to figure new ways to tell the same story. Uh-huh. So just long story short, I grew up in a very musical family. My parents were jazz musicians. They played clubs.
Okay.
And we always would, they'd always help us figure it. Well, my two older brothers, and we played all the 70s. I was born in 61, so my brothers are older than me, and I listened to, all the 70s rock stuff.
Sure.
And we played all that music. It was my two brothers and another guy named Peter Fletcher. And so Paul Winger, Nate Winger, Peter Fletcher, and me, four-piece band. And we were together for about 13 years, starting from the time I was six until I left the band when I was 18 or 19.
Now, one of your brothers left first, though, right? And didn't you guys kind of become like a power trio?
Yes, and then he came back, and then we were four-piece again, and then the outside guy left, and it was just my three brothers. So there was many different incarnations, and like I say, we played every cover known to man, all the Led Zeppelin from the Beatles, Led Zeppelin, and some of the more like the three-piece stuff, which is huge for me. I'm still waiting to have my chance to jam with Joe Walsh because, you know, James Gang was huge for me. And, you know, we did Rush and James Gang, and Grand Funk was a big one. And I've been really fortunate to become friends with Mark Farner, who's incredible. So, yeah, and left that band, went to New York, and got a job working with Alice Cooper, and the rest is history. Did I answer that question?
Yeah, you did. You did. But I think even before that, I may be way off here, but didn't you take like the Suzuki piano? Wasn't your family?
Man, you did your homework. So my mom got me this. It was I think it was the Yamaha piano course, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, that was like the alternative, like the Sprite version of the piano courses for young people. And it was good. I really excelled at that, and then very quickly lost interest in piano, unfortunately. And I wanted to play bass, and you know, it was just a natural thing. We never actually argued about who played what. My brother played drums, my oldest brother played guitar, and I wanted to play bass, and so that was that. But so actually, I regret that I didn't go further with that, because I sight read really well when I was a kid, and now I'm terrible sight reader.
Are you?
But
it gave you a good foundation, right?
It did.
Musically, Do you still fall back on that? Did you ever go back to the piano?
I do. No, I mean, I studied piano again with my cousin, who's an amazing pianist named Noble Kime, and he actually is a co-writer on a couple of my solo albums. And my confidant, my musical confidant, and I, he's in life. We have mentors, right? Mm-hmm. So I was always actively seeking mentors. That's one thing that you should know as an insight into my personality. I don't actually mention that too much, but from being very young, I was really tuned into the fact that when I didn't know something, I wanted to go find somebody who did and learn it from them. And that, coupled with not being a good student and not being interested in being in school and not being able to be in school, because I was always playing gigs, I would always try to find a mentor who knew what I wanted to learn and, you know, work with them for a while and then, you know, move from mentor to mentor. And I've had been very lucky in having, you know, a handful of incredible mentors. So I got sidetracked there, but
that's important. I think especially as people come to town, you know, to find those mentors and find a way to learn from them without being so opportunistic that you're just trying to suck information out of them without offering any type of relationship back, right?
Right. Yeah. No. You have to give for what you get, for sure. I mean, that's a big thing. Okay. And, you know, my dad, when I was young, my dad bought me this book called Think and Grow Rich.
Yeah.
By Napoleon Hill. Right. Yeah. So now it has a lot of really good lessons in there, and the big quote from that book is, never enter into anything that doesn't benefit all whom it affects. That's a key principle for what, you know, the way I live my life.
Right. Mm. So, okay, we're gonna bounce around here, if you don't mind.
Yeah, man. A non-linear conversation.
Well, non-linear. So, you know, you've played the stadiums, you've played huge outdoor festivals, you've done this, you've done that. What goes through your mind when you're sitting in a theater and hear an orchestra perform your composition and see the dancers for the first time?
Oh, that was totally surreal, because I studied ballet when I was a kid, and my big goal in life was to write music for ballet. So a couple things. I mean, the gratification of having actually achieved a goal that I've had for so long that I didn't actually think was attainable.
Right.
Like when I knew I always wanted to, I always knew I wanted to compose classical music, but I never imagined that a symphony orchestra would ever play any of it. You know? So that was one dream when I was young, in my late teens, with that I knew I wanted to do but didn't know if it was attainable. So when it started happening, it was, you know, the gratification of that and it was incredible. And, you know, it was for me, it was the kind of feeling like, wow, I'm finally in exactly the place that I want to be. You know, it's been a long time coming where I'm sitting in this chair, listening to this music, seeing this, And, you know, that's it's something that I'd been envisioning for many, many years. And, you know, finally getting there. I mean, anybody that achieves a goal and does it successfully, I mean, it's an incredible feeling.
Yeah, I just talking about a non-linear way to get around to doing ballet. I mean, it's just one of those things, like you said, as unlikely as it probably seemed when you were a teenager, I would imagine when you were at the height with The Rock, you're probably thinking, okay, now that's probably really not feasible.
No, that's not true, actually. The whole time I was with Alice, I was studying. I had a composition. When I moved to New York, I was first studying. I said I was studying piano with my cousin, mm-hmm. and then when I moved to New York, I was like, "Okay, I got to find a teacher. What do I, you know? Because I want to learn this, you know." And
right.
It was some composition. So I looked in the paper. I was living in Hoboken, New Jersey, and I just looked in the paper and I saw composition lessons. I was like, "There's something. I'll try that." You know. So I go to this guy named Edgar Grana, who was the perfect teacher for me at the time, and you know, he had me. He was smart enough to know that everything that I couldn't do, and he would have me take a Prince song, dismantle it, re-record it in two or three different ways, and you know, just kind of talk about the results. You know, and for me that was mind-blowing because it was like, okay, I'm going to take this existing song, so I don't need to worry about the composition of it. I'm just going to get into, you know, the composition from a point of view of just studying somebody else who's great. And then rearranging it to my ear.
Right.
And those kind of exercises were incredible. I did write a string quartet under him that had some merit to it. I mean, it was basically terrible, but there was a couple good moments in it. But so I took, when I got the Alice Cooper gig, you know, Alice used to call me the briefcase rocker because I'd carry, you know, scores around in my briefcase. And, you know, I was never like a partier, really. I mean, I personally can't drink when I sing, so when I'm on the road, I'm as straight as an arrow.
Yeah.
And and then that followed suit in Winger. All the time I was on the road, I was always, you know, studying, because I've had such a fascination with all this music that I wanted to know, get to the bottom of how to do it. I will say that it's much, much easier just to go to 4 years of undergrad and learn it all really quickly. And, you know,
did you ever consider that?
Going back, I always want to, dude. I still dream about being in school, you know, like running down the hallway naked, you know, it's a music school. You know, I wish I would love to, but I just, you know, my career is just too demanding travel-wise, and I mean, it's never going to happen.
Yeah. So when you're composing a piece, do you use an orchestrator, or how does that work different parts?
No, that to me, that's cheating. You know, that's a big thing. You know, there's a lot of...
What's an orchestrator, just for...
Okay, so orchestration is when you have a musical idea and you want to put it in front of the orchestra, you have to translate it in their language. So you, in the orchestra, there's essentially four parts: winds, brass, percussion, and strings, and then you can add your piano or some other, maybe a soloist instrument. But you have to know that the clarinet is a transpose instrument, and if you write this note, it's going to sound like that note, and you know how they're going to articulate, and then you know, the sonorities of what a French horn might sound like when it's coupled with a bassoon, and you know, so on and so forth. And it's a lot of information.
Right.
And so a lot of pop guys that want to, quote, write classical music, they write a melody and some chords and they hand it off to the guy who's, quote, orchestrating. Well, in my mind...
But he's writing all the parts for all the different...
That is co-writing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's plain and simple. I mean, so I'm a real purist.
Interesting.
I feel like composing is largely orchestrating because that's where you create the color.
Right.
Like, it's your decision as the orchestrator if the winds are going to take that part or the brass is going to take that part. Now, that's a big difference in sonorities and just sound textures and how you want that to all come out. That is composing. It's not just melody and chords and this kind of thing. So,
but it's also all the other melodies and counter, you know, point and all the other stuff that's going on. Yeah.
Yeah. And now like film composers will compose and have orchestrators do it, but mm-hmm. to their we can let them off the hook because they've got 2 weeks to write 2 hours of music.
Right.
So they have to, it's impossible. You know, I'm working on a new musical called Get Jack.
We're going to talk about that later.
Mm-hmm. And, it took me 2 years to write the music. I fully orchestrated all the music as I went.
Wow.
You know, so if I had just written the tunes, I could have knocked out some chords and stuff and, you know, handed it off. But for me, that is the personality of the music. And any great composer is they orchestrate their own stuff. So,
wow.
Yeah. And I can say I'm a bit, persnickety about that. For guys that come from my world, I feel like, you know, I had to earn some respect from orchestras because, you know, and I wanted to earn the respect. Because I honor the orchestra. It's a big, incredible honor for me to have any orchestra play my music. So I want to meet them on their level. I don't want to cheat it in any way, you know. So when somebody asks me about a part or an articulation or any of that stuff, I want to know the answer to that. So I can speak. It's like speaking German. You know, you have to, you know, ich spreche ein bisschen Deutsch, aber nicht sehr gut. And they say something back, and you go, I have no idea what you're saying.
That's when I say, ich habe so viel Hausaufgabe,
yeah,
and I
schön,
walk away.
Dankeschön.
Hey, we need to take a break, but this segment was brought to you by Dogwood Cabins. Heino and I were just in separate cabins.
Separate cabins. just pointing
not that
out.
There's anything wrong with that. But no, we went to the Smoky Mountain Songwriter Festival.
That's right.
And we decided this year we wanted to stay in the quiet part of the Smokies.
And we did.
It was fantastic.
It was gorgeous. And the cabins were great. I mean, it was just, I almost wish we could have spent more time in the cabins. Especially the way they were decked out with the pool tables and the...
Was it glamping?
It was definitely glamping.
It was nice. There was nothing.
There was no roughing it.
There was no roughing it. No roughing it. We had a great time, though. And it's Townsend, Tennessee. Check it out, dogwoodcabins.com. We're going to be back with more of Kip Winger here on the Music Row Show. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're here with Kip Winger, and that is a composition of his called Mysterioso. Mysterioso.
You sounded like you're Harry Potter there for a minute. You added the extra Mysterioso.
Oh.
That's fine, too. Yeah. Well, I'll change the name.
Oh, yeah.
That's totally fine.
Yeah.
By the way, Nashville Ballet is doing the ballet in 2018. So that's
nice.
Kind of cool.
That's Ghosts.
Yes.
Yes.
That's exciting. I'm just thinking of our WSM listeners.
Yeah, they're like, what happened?
What just happened? What just happened? And where'd George Plaster go?
That was a very mellow and that's called a cadenza.
We'll have to play Vivace next,
where the violinist just kind of does a solo in the middle of a piece. It's called a cadenza. But you know, if you want to rock it, play the opening of Nijinsky. That's where I've am doing my rock band with the orchestra. That's, you know, kind of what happened for me was like, okay, how do I bring what I do to the orchestra now? Because I kind of came into it thinking, you know, that I needed to conform to what they're into, you know, kind of more coming from, you know, kind of chameleonize myself into what what the classical world would want.
Mm-hmm.
And so I soon realized that because of my background is really actually what sets me apart. And, excuse me, I need to bring that into what I can bring into the concert hall. And, So I'm always searching for ways to make an orchestra rock like a rock band, but legitimately with all the stuff that would go along with a proper composition.
Right.
No drum solos.
Well, no, that's could. Interesting that you say
you
that.
Could.
Just yeah, no, I'm thinking about drum. I'm thinking about that.
Actually. Are you?
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
Wow.
It's never been done the way I think it should be done, basically. So, and the other thing is that, you know, we all know this. You guys write songs. Like, you always sit around and go, well, why does this song need to exist? Like, why am I writing this? What is this actually saying? You don't want to just throw out some cookie cutter stuff just because you think whatever. You know, it's kind of important to write music that needs to exist for right. me. I mean, that's kind of, you know, because early days with Winger, it was back when, you know, the internet hadn't really been born yet, and it was all the record companies going, I don't hear the hit, you know.
Right.
And now the business has changed so much, for me, in more good ways than bad. I mean, the bad way, obviously, is that there's the money, intellectual property thing is out the window. But, you know, creatively, it's fantastic because, you know, people can just speak their soul, and there's so much more stuff out there to pick that's actually would never have had a chance to see the light of day if the record companies had a strong arm hold on it still, you know.
That's true.
The creativity is just astounding in all genres of music now. Hmm. So that's
good stuff. Okay, so as someone who may or may not, inspired by your music videos, attempted a 360 on stage while playing an instrument quite unsuccessfully. It never dawned on that someone that you did come from that classical dancer background. And once I read that and I go back and I'm watching the videos and I'm going, oh yeah, you can absolutely tell.
Oh, that's why.
Yeah, you can see.
Absolutely tell. So talk about
how there is a way to do that, right, without killing yourself.
Yeah. So talk about how dancing entered your world
to begin with. You know, quite honestly, I was like, you know, I was going out with a girlfriend who wanted to take ballet, and none of her girlfriends would do it with her. And my brother and I were heavily into this martial arts called Kaju Kenbo. And so I was all stretched out. I could pull my leg up to my head and all that stuff and almost do the splits and all this. I was 15 or 16, and I thought, hey, I'll do that with you. That sounds fun, you know, like, let's check that out. Because I've always kind of edged towards the more eclectic theater kind of vibe, you know. So I go into the ballet studio, and I hear all this amazing music coming out that the piano player's playing. I'm like, wow, what's that, you know?
Yeah.
Because I was totally underexposed as a kid to this, you know. I grew up in a pack of wolves with my brothers playing, you know, Hole in the Sky by Black Sabbath. I mean,
right.
So.
Not a lot of Stravinsky?
No, completely unaware that that was even in existence. So I walk into this and I'm thinking, oh my God, this is incredible. I was immediately sucked in. And so we took a class and I took to it like a duck to water. I mean, it's extraordinarily difficult for one, you know, it's mm-hmm. like, wow, precision, you know, and the athletic precision is incredible. So that combined with the music and the art of it was, you know, I still take ballet class to this day. I took a couple classes at Nashville Ballet not too long ago. You know,
they got
a great facility over there. No, I mean, look, you know, I'm old and fat, but hey, you know, it's great exercise, and it's also great for the mind. Any exercise is great for the mind. So it's, you know, I did it and I got really into it, and I got recruited into the company because there's very few men.
Sure, and they were excited.
Back then in Colorado, and if I'd been to New York, you know, whatever. But so I did a few ballets. I danced a couple seasons, and I did that whole thing. That's when I really was like, oh, this is what I want to do musically. I don't know how I'm going to do this, and it seems completely out of reach, but that is what I want to do.
So then, given that those were your aspirations, then how did you end up then doing the rock thing when at that young age you were already wanting to do the classical thing? And
because,
the ballet
I mean,
thing?
The path was set for me, and I was really, you know, I wanted to be a rock star and all that stuff. I mean, it was kind of a distant dream, you know. It was like, even though I was in the ballet studio doing pliés and stuff, I wasn't like I was Baryshnikov or anything like that. I wasn't that great, you know. I mean, my training was bad, and And I was looking at David Lee Roth going, wow, look at him. He's doing the splits. So I need to be able to up my game a little bit here.
Right, right.
So, and, you know, I you look at David Lee Roth, Ian Anderson would do some weird moves on stage that were kind of like that. And Freddie Mercury. And I was thinking, wow, these guys are really kind of, quote, theatrical performers. And Kiss, you know,
right.
this kind of thing.
Right.
And so I wanted to do, you know, Kiss meets Yes with, because I was doing, you know, my band played 2112 when I was 16, you know.
Nice.
So I was really into the prog thing. And, you know, that's kind of how it all came together. When I joined Alice Cooper, I was writing solo music. Okay, so In the Heart of the Young is a Winger song.
Mm-hmm.
That was on the second album that was released in 91. But I wrote that song in 85.
Wow.
Which is right around the time I joined Alice Cooper. So I was really into Peter Gabriel and all that kind of thing, you know. So they all just, they coexisted in a distant way. And then now it's all starting to come together, basically, at the ripe old age of 56.
Nice.
How about when you're writing? So, okay, so, you know, country music tells a story. You know, typically, there's basic structures and time constraints. Pop and rock music that you know, even they have to adhere to certain things. But classical orchestra is just a completely different animal to me. So how do you know when a movement's finished?
Well, you'll see the orchestra stop, and if the
okay, wait a minute. Let me rephrase that question.
They're packing their instruments and they're headed for the car.
If the conductor... Like, if you see him, like, relax and turn around, you know the piece is over.
Let me rephrase that. When you're writing the song, Kip, when do you know the movement's done?
So, you know, in class, it's okay, so there's two things happening. Like, on one hand, anything goes, and on the other hand, there's some standard things like an overture might be, you know, an opening piece might be 9 or 10 minutes, a fairly major piece might be 20 to 30 minutes, like a concerto or something like that. You know, you never want to write an hour long concerto, really, because it's not normal, you know. So there are those things.
Okay.
There are you know, rough guidelines. You know, an opera is going to be, you know, two acts, and a now they're doing one-act operas. There's a guy named Mason Bates who is he was a fellow nominee in the Grammys last year when I got nominated, and he's a great composer. And he sits and does some electronic stuff with his, you know, he'll play like some beat machines with the orchestra and stuff. He just did an opera on Steve Jobs, you know. So,
oh, really?
And it was a one-act opera. So there are some rules, but it's loose, you know. But you don't, everybody knows kind of in the zone. And then the music will tell you, you know, the music is like, in classical music, you try to develop something much more than you would in country music. Like, sing me a melody from country music sing me a song, the chorus line, the first chorus line of a song you wrote.
Dope, Scott.
That I wrote?
Yeah.
Just anything. Like.
Okay. Let's put another quarter in the ride.
Right. So we would go. You know, that kind
just
of thing.
Kind of really stretch it out, yeah.
Yeah, you have to learn.
So
use
more than three chords is what you're saying.
You do more of a long form thing. And, you know, for me, getting from short form to long form was really critical and very difficult.
What was difficult about it?
It's
hard that process.
It's hard to know the you know, you have to you dissect the elements of a short cell or a phrase or something like that, and then try to find interesting ways to elongate that over, you know, 20 or 30 bars instead of maybe 16 bars of a phrase instead of like a 3-bar phrase or something
right.
like that.
Wow.
And then, you know, add a counterpoint and then to harmonize and then, you know, all that kind of thing. So I have some key mentors like Michael Keurig, who teaches at Blair School of Music here in Nashville, was a key component for me getting over the short form to the long form. And then a Richard Daniel Poor was another composition teacher of mine who then helped me really understand the mechanism of the orchestra. It's really a living, breathing, you know, entity that you really have to learn to understand, you know. So it's really interesting that we're having this conversation, because for many, many, many years I went along in my life and it was all this wonderment of what's the word? Mystery. And so in studying it more, I've demystified it all, and I'm looking at it from the other side now, you know, and I've been fortunate that every piece I've written has been performed by an orchestra, which is rare.
That's incredible.
But I'm seeing it now from the other side, and so the mystery gets taken away, but the inspiration is more there now than ever, because now I know what the possibility is.
Mm. Wow.
Wow.
All right. Take a break. This segment brought to you by our pal, Buddy Hyatt. BuddyHyatt.com.
Buddy Hyatt is one of the great producers here in town. You and I have been doing demos with him for a couple of years now. And every time I
know
go
that and, name.
You do?
Do you?
Yeah.
Of course.
He's awesome. Yeah. And just every time I record with him, I'm that much more impressed with what he does and what he brings to the table, and the incredible talent he's able to pull together and put in the studio to work on my little song. It's awesome.
Absolutely. And so wherever you are, get a hold of him, BuddyHyatt.com. You have songs. You'd love to hear them. You'd love to hear them brought to life the way you hear them in your head. Now, his next session is September 20th. I'm going to be there.
And excellent.
So y'all come on and join me at the session. It's going to be a lot of fun. BuddyHyatt.com. We're going to be back with more of Kip Winger again at the Nashville Symphony September 14th, 15th, and 16th. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are here with Kip Winger, and that is a piece from his Conversations with Nijinsky, which was a ballet that was recently performed. Was it performed with the Nashville Ballet?
No, not yet.
That's Ghosts, but yeah. It was performed with the San Francisco Ballet.
No, this is a piece that I wrote after Ghosts and intended as a ballet, but it has not been choreographed yet.
Oh.
But the truth is that it might never get choreographed, because it's kind of one of those things that the reason I called it Conversation with Nijinsky is because I was reading a bunch of material on Nijinsky at the time. And for those of you who don't know who he was really the ground zero of male ballet dancers and choreographers. He did all this cutting edge, stuff at the beginning of the 20th century in like early 1900s in France. His career was cut short. He got schizophrenia, and a lot of tragic things happened. But he made such an impact that it's lived on, and it will live on forever. So I'm reading these material, and I'm writing this piece of music that wasn't actually intended for that. And then all of a sudden, at one point, maybe 20 minutes into the piece, I realized that I was really conversing with him in my imagination. And it came out as what I refer to as the unseen dances of Nijinsky. Nice.
Well, stick around after the show. We'll choreograph something. I got my tights and leg warmers in the back.
Oh, boy. go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask you about Ghosts, since we that's the one that's coming up here with the Nashville Ballet. How did that project come about? And tell us a little bit of the backstory behind that piece.
That was done. I wrote that in 2008, I think, and then I sent it to a very well-known choreographer named Christopher Wheeldon, who wasn't actually as well-known back then. And, you know, I got lucky. He loved it, and I met him. He was at, I had friends at New York City Ballet. I was dating a girl at New York City Ballet and met him. And years later, sent him some music, and he loved the first movement of that, so I then turned it into a bigger piece.
Nice.
And then I didn't hear anything for a year or so, and then a year later, I got an email saying that he'd like to do it for, he'd like to choreograph it for On San Francisco Ballet, which is like one of you guys writing a song and having, you know, somebody huge call you up and go, this is our lead single, you know.
So, yeah,
that's awesome.
It was amazing. And they did an incredible job, and it was a big hit, and got performed all over the world. And Paul Vasterling, who's the artistic director at Nashville Ballet, him and I have been friends for a while, and I'm a fan of his work, and we've been trying to figure out a way to work together. And he was able to work it out with Chris to be able to do that next year.
Nice.
So generally speaking, when you're writing for ballet, are you working with the choreographer as you write, or does the choreography just come later, or are you thinking about the dancing as you're choreographing, like, oh, this would be cool for this type of thing?
It happens both ways.
Okay.
You know, so you can write some stuff and the choreographer will listen to it and go, maybe do something over there. But in this case, I just wrote the piece and he choreographed it. So it happens all different ways.
Okay.
To be honest with you, I've done only one ballet. It's ironic that I really wanted to do music for ballet, and it's turned out that the straight concert music has really taken over.
And that's what we're getting this week at the Nashville Symphony.
Yeah, and I just want to say that it's an incredible honor to have the Nashville Symphony doing my piece, because I've been all over the world, and I go to concerts all over the world. I make a point of, you know, going to see, if I play in Oslo, I go to the Symphony Hall and see what they're up to. And the players in Nashville Symphony are, in many ways, the best players that I've ever seen, because they're so exposed to other kind of music, and they're always doing sessions in this town. And so there's this kind of potpourri of musicians in this town that are at such a high level. And they turn around and they bring that into the orchestra, and combined with Giancarlo Guerrero, who's an incredible conductor, you know, they're, in my mind, they're at the very top of symphony orchestras in the world. And for my piece in particular, there's a lot of difficult rhythms in there where, you know, other orchestras might not be able to do them so well. And I haven't been to rehearsal yet, but I know that, for example, like when I write on the first movement of this, it breaks into a quote riff that could be done on a rock guitar, and it's in the cello and bass section. And I know that they're going to rock it, because I just have heard them enough to know. And I know by their experience that they're just going to kill it, you know. So it's really, really an honor, and it's incredibly exciting for me to just sit there and listen to them play it, because they're so incredible.
That's amazing. Nice. So, okay, we have done such a horrible job plugging, but your website is?
Yeah, I've got several, but, you know, kipwinger.com and the Facebook, you know, Kipwinger, and Winger the Band, and
yeah,
and all that.
And if people, if there's still tickets available, they just go to Nashville Symphony for these for this week's performances.
Yeah, yeah. It's and there's not actually a lot of tickets left. It's pretty cool. It's very full all three nights. So
that's exciting. Congratulations.
About that. Thank you.
We're going to come back.
By the way, not to interrupt you, but there's Andre Watts is playing a piano concerto by McDowell, which is, you know, Andre Watts is a legend.
Yeah.
You know? So it's, you know, to be in the room with him, for anybody should go to see him perform. I mean, he's one of the top pianists in the world.
Very, very cool. Well, we're going to come back. We're going to talk. I want to talk a little bit more about Get Jack, if that's all right.
Sure.
If we can touch on that. Segment brought to you by Barbara Potter Photography. We need pictures. She is in town for the month of November, and she's taking appointments right now.
Nice.
Go on Facebook.
We should do what other people should do, and that's go to Facebook.com, search Barbara Potter Photography,
right,
and make an appointment.
That's right.
That's what you do, because she's an awesome photographer. as is evidenced by your latest project, which she took the photos for. And
it didn't, you know, I looked all right.
You actually, she's amazing with Photoshop. So, I mean, she really knows her stuff there.
Excellent.
So,
excellent.
Well, listen, so check out Barbara Potter Photography, and we are going to be back with a whole lot more of Kip Winger here on the Music Row Show. So come on back. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're just sitting here rocking out.
We were headbanging right there.
Kip Winger's our guest, and that is the opening movement to Conversations with Nijinsky.
Did I
say that right?
That's correct.
Okay, and that you could kind of hear the rock influence there. That's kind of cool.
There's a lot of notes.
A lot of notes. Yeah.
Well, you got a lot of notes in that song.
Yeah. So you mentioned earlier wanting to be, you know, earn respect from the orchestral community. How hard was that as a former rocker? Was it?
It's hard, man, because they think you're going to come in with film music or, like, you know, very simple stuff that's diatonic and simple to play, and that I don't really know my, you know, transposition.
So too simple is a bad.
It's not really that. It's just that it's hard to be taken seriously because to write a legitimate concert piece of music nowadays, I mean, you really have to have your chops up, you know, mm-hmm. and play something that's engaging for them. I mean, you have to remember, they spend their whole life playing this music. So,
right.
You know, you don't want to insult them with something that's, you know, half-assed, you know. So
you want to be whole-assed.
A lot of people just thought, who's this guy from a rock band thinks he can come in and do this thing?
Right.
You know, so,
mm-hmm. And you said that you studied, but we really didn't talk. You studied for, you know, years and years and years on this.
This
wasn't just a, all right, I'm going to write classical music
year. No, I set out to do it the way you would do it if you went to a university to get a doctorate degree or something like
that.
I went through, you know, I found teachers that took me through all the things you would do when you go to school. And I revere the craft. So, and I still study. So it's, you know, there's always something more to learn. I mean, I was on the phone with my publisher today looking over some parts where there were some mistakes and I didn't do some stuff right. So there's still a lot of stuff to learn. And it's very interesting for me because I'm quite the music theory geek, you know. And so there's a whole, it's very interesting if you're into it.
Absolutely. Well, we just have like 4 more minutes, so give us a little touch of what's happening with Get Jack.
So Get Jack is a sung through musical. It's kind of like an opera, actually. It's two acts, fully sung through, fully orchestrated for full orchestra and rock. There's some rock band stuff in it. Hmm. It's actually kind of an amazing genre for me because it's one place where I've put everything that I do in one genre. And it's a cool story. It's an interesting take. It's about the 5 women Jack the Ripper killed who come back for vengeance on Jack.
Nice.
And so we make them superheroes and we give them back some dignity and it was really fun project for me. I'm writing for 5 women singers and 3 male singers. So we've got a Kickstarter thing up right now. We funded in 2 days, so we're doing a concert reading of it in New York on October 30th. So
just for people who don't know, what is a concert reading?
So they're going to stand, the 8 singers are going to stand there and it's sung through, so they're going to sing through it like a concert.
Okay.
And to my tracks, because to get a full orchestra and a band together to actually do it live would be prohibitively expensive.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So we're gonna showcase it there on October 30th and then hopefully move on to a workshop from there. But it's been in a really fun project. For more information, you can see Get Jack Musical.
Get
on
Jack
Facebook,
Musical.
On Facebook.
All right. How many, exciting. You just made me think of this. How many pieces, generally speaking, when you're writing for an orchestra, are there?
I think there's 56 in this.
56 different instruments.
In this piece that's being played at Nashville Symphony. Don't quote me on that. It might be 58. But you know what? They have a bigger string section. So in the string section...
Some of them are treated as groups.
Well, it's first violin, second mm-hmm. violin, viola, cello, bass. And they can have anywhere from six first violins to 16, which in this case, I think there's going to be 16 on the first. So the strings are going to be bigger than I've ever heard them. And it's going to be really something special
I'm
for
so
me.
Happy for you. That's going to be
that
just
is amazing.
Killer.
I love that.
Thank you very much. It's going to be a blast. So well, please go if you guys get a chance.
Now, any future plans to do more rock stuff, or are you just devoting yourself to this at this point?
It's funny. My record company's begging us for another Winger record, so it's possible. You know, I still tour with Winger, you know, and we're best friends. Rod's doing a Dixie Dregs reunion, by the way, with the original members.
Really?
In April, and I think it's March and April. So keep an eye out for that. Reb's in Whitesnake. He's the longest surviving member of Whitesnake. So I'm doing all this. And John, our other guitar player's in Starship. And Paul's writing songs for TV and film. And so we all have a lot of stuff going on. But the thing that's really key about our band is that we just love the hang. So we book gigs to hang out with each other.
Yeah.
And so we will make another album at some point. I don't know when, but...
Awesome.
It's coming, you know.
Love that. Well, thank you so much for coming and hanging out with
thanks
us.
Thanks for having me.
Looking forward to the concert coming up here this week with Nashville Symphony. And go check out Kip Winger at kipwinger.com. And don't forget.
You got to come back.
Get Jack Musical.
I'd love to. Well, I'll play you some Get Jack when I come back.
Nice.
Love that.
I'm a poet and don't know it.
Oh, there you go. Look at your feet. They're long, fellows. Hey, we got another great hour of the show coming up. We got the folks from the John D. Loudermilk tribute. We got Harry Stinson. We got Beth Hooker. We got John Jorgensen. So come on back to the Music Row Show here in just a second.
That was fun. Strong heart.